Okay, thanks, Dana. So again, as we mentioned in 2018, that OISP, our policy folks, did release several trust policy updates, as you heard in some of the other presentations. So we'll just kind of go over those briefly just to make sure, and again, reiterate the changes. One thing I do want to clarify is the updates are considered policy clarifications. So we're not saying we changed our policy, we're just saying that we clarified our policy. So as a result, our field office technicians and the trust reviewers, and of course the RTLs, now we have a greater, more appropriate understanding of what the original intent of the trust POMs were. So as you may have heard, the POMs previously were a bit general, and so they were interpreted general or in different ways depending on who the trust reviewer was, who the field office technician was. But now, since the POMs have been updated and provides more examples, provides better clarification, I do believe that we're now making more accurate trust determinations, and now the determinations reflect what the intended trust policy was meant to be from the beginning. Unfortunately, I have to admit that had the trust POMs had that information originally, then there wouldn't be as many issues with our determinations and of saying that, no, this trust does not meet the policy. But now that it has been updated and has been clarified, and now we really understand what they meant to say years ago, now we can apply that policy. And so, again, we didn't change our policy. We just clarified our policy, and I think we're now better for it. Okay, so one of the sections that was changed was in SI 0120.200. There's that long title there, and again, it was effective back in April 2018. And basically, that POM section provided instructions on how to determine and document the resource status of third-party trust, our trust established prior to January 1st, 2000 for SSI purposes. And also it incorporated our new business process. When the new business process came out, it was basically sent to us in a message. And so if you looked in POMs for it, it wasn't there. But now the original message that was implemented in 2014 has now been updated to POMs, so that process is now in that POM section. The next section that was updated, and probably the most important one, was in SI 0120.201, and these were trusts established with the assets of an individual on or after 1/1/2000, and again, that was also effective April 30, 2018. Now, this section provides instructions on determining the resource status of a trust established with the assets of an individual on or after 1/1/2000, and it also clarifies those three exceptions to the sole benefit for third-party payment rules. And it clarifies which trust payments to third parties for travel expenses do not violate that all-important sole benefit requirement and provide additional guidance. So this POMS, I must admit, was really a great improvement, and as a result of it, again, we're making better and more accurate resource determinations. So the general rule says that FO technicians, when they review a trust, they want to make sure that the trust is established for the sole benefit of the trust beneficiary, and the trust should not benefit any other individual, whether at the time the trust is established or during the lifetime of the beneficiary. So again, that's the general rule. And that we're not supposed to consider a trust that allows payments of the trust corpus or income to be paid to anybody else to be considered to be a violation of the sole benefit. So basically, that's a general rule. So the trust is for the beneficiary. That's what the money should be used for, not for anyone else. But again, that's in general. But of course, we have those exceptions. And the exceptions are payments to a third party that result in the trust beneficiary receiving some type of good or some type of service. So as was said before, the key to evaluating the sole benefit requirement is that when the trust makes a payment for third-party payments for goods or services, it must be for the primary benefit of the trust beneficiary. But the field office technician shouldn't read that to mean that it couldn't prevent any collateral benefit to anyone else. As was said earlier, you know, if the trustee purchases a TV, that doesn't mean that the other family members cannot watch it. Also, the trust buys a home for the beneficiary, that doesn't mean that no one else can live there. But on the other hand, we want to make sure that we want you to know that it would violate the sole benefit provision. Say, for example, the trust bought a car The grandson used the car to bring the beneficiary to the doctor's appointment twice a month and then uses the car the rest of the month to go to work. That is not for the sole benefit of the trust beneficiary. So again, we're looking at it's primarily for the beneficiary, but yes, other people can receive some collateral benefit from that distribution.